Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mind Stories. Today, I'm pleased to have Dr. Charlene Ruan as our guest as we discuss EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Dr. Ruan is the founder, CEO, and clinical director of Thrive Psychology Group in Los Angeles, California. She specializes in women's mental health, including trauma recovery, infertility, pregnancy, motherhood, financial empowerment, sleep, self-care, stress management and reduction, optimal performance, overcoming shame, self-esteem, boundary development, adult children of narcissists, and personal growth and development. She has extensive experience working with CEOs, founders, and entrepreneurs and the unique challenges they face. She is certified by EMDRIA in EMDR and attachment-focused EMDR. Welcome, Charlene. Hello, and welcome to the next episode of Mind Stories. Today, I have Dr. Charlene Ruan, who is joining us to talk a little bit about EMDR and its uses. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, I think the main, actually maybe the most basic question I have is, what does EMDR stand for?
Yeah, it's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which can actually be a little bit misleading because you can also use sounds and you can use touch, anything that's like that bilateral stimulation of the senses.
Okay. And what does it do? Why would someone seek out EMDR as a treatment modality?
Well, initially it was used for trauma, and that's still its main use. So for PTSD, for any traumatic responses. It's been around since the 80s and 90s, like the early 90s. So it's been around for a while. But usually I use it with my clients for when they've had something traumatic happen, even if it's something in their childhood. So if there's any kind of like an assault, a car accident, or if they had abuse as a child, and it's when trauma is impacting their life. So either through PTSD or through other symptoms when trauma is impacting their current life. Mm-hmm.
So, and how, what is the mechanism in which it might work or help with that?
Yeah. So it's interesting because, so when something traumatic happens, I mean, it's, do you mind if I talk a little bit about trauma? Okay. Cause I think it's helpful for people to understand because there's starting to be a lot more awareness of what trauma is, which is great. Because I think there wasn't until recently, but thankfully there is more information out there. But when something traumatic happens, it gets stored in the brain in a different way. So when we think of trauma, we think of like a car accident, we think of a sexual assault, but sometimes it can be something that happens as a child that we would not think of traumatic as now, but as a child, it's traumatic to us because we're so little and have so little power. But it's anything that really overwhelms the brain and puts us in a state of where we think that our survival is threatened or the survival of someone who's important to us. So if we see our mother being threatened or we feel that like our attachment to our parent is threatened, which is also really traumatic for a kid, it just stores memories differently in the brain. And it's meant to be protective. That's the brain's way of protecting us. It stores memories in the part of the brain that's much more reflexive. So when we think of somebody, like the most classic example of PTSD, someone who's say a war vet, you know, and they hear the car backfiring and they dive under the table before they even know what's happened. That's because that memory of something that traumatic happened to them is stored in the older part of the brain that's closer to the brain stem, and it's stored in a different way. So it's not like a story that's in your hippocampus that's in a linear way. Instead, it's stored with to be accessed very easily. So it's kind of jumbled and, you know, smells can trigger it and sounds can trigger it. And it's meant to protect us. It's the brain's way of saying, okay, I need to remember this thing. This is important that I remember this because, you know, if this happens again, I need to be really reflexive and really respond. But that can mess us up when we are out of that dangerous environment and all of a sudden we're being triggered by things that are actually not threatening. So what EMDR does is it helps us to take those memories out of that limbic system, fight, flight, freeze part of the brain, and instead put them into our hippocampus where it's instead we make a story about it, like this hard thing happened, but I recovered and I'm strong and things have worked out for me. So EMDR helps our brain get the memories to where they should be so that we feel more in control of our responses. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess what I was thinking, though, not everybody who has had traumatic events as children, they carry them with them, but not all of them continue to have the stress response throughout their life, though. So what's the difference between someone who carries that with them and someone who doesn't, just kind of just how their brain works and how their brain processes things or holds on to things?
Yeah. So if they're, and that's, you know, even things that happen as an adult. So like PTSD is not a foregone conclusion for everybody who goes to war. And do you have the supports in your life? Are you able to get to safety later? Did you feel like something, you know, successfully that trauma was completed? And then you're like, okay, I'm safe again. It's the ability of the brain to return to safety. So if you grow up in an environment where you're not safe, they give the example of like trauma, you know, that trauma response is terrific if you see a bear and you run from the bear and then, you know, you calm down and your brain is able to kick in your parasympathetic nervous system and you recover. That's a lot different than if you live with the bear and, you know, that's your father who's an alcoholic and dangerous and you don't know from day to day. That really overloads the brain of a child. And it's that, you know, ongoing trauma that responds differently. So it really depends how it's stored in the brain. And then also I think, you know, there's individual differences. It's interesting. Every person responds in a different way. And so it's kind of when you're working people to see how it responds differently.
Okay. So can you describe a little bit of the process of EMDR? Is that probably the next thing to dive into, you think, at this point?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's so interesting because, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of misinformation out online, you know, because I think of it like people think, oh, it's like hypnosis or it's, you know, it's just really, there's a lot of kind of myth and mystery around it. Like, oh, what are the eye movements? What are we doing? You know, it's just, there's a certain weirdness factor to it that I think that gets a lot of press. But it's an 8-phase process. So the first part is you do a really in-depth intake. So you're trying to figure out like, what is the trauma that you're processing? What are the beliefs that are going along with it? What are the body sensations and reactions? And how is that impacting you in your daily life? Like, what are your triggers? And so when you have that figured out, then you target specific memories. And so memories in your brain will chain together. Like your brain tries to organize these in a way that can help you. You know, our brain is like, you know, it's the computer that has like all of these memories. And so you link along certain beliefs or certain body senses. And so you're trying to get to that target memory that gets you into the memory that's being triggered, that's causing the current issues. And so you target the memory, and then I usually use buzzers. So they're like little, instead of the eye movements, and different people do it different ways. So you can do the eye movements, and I wish I could show you, like, you know, have you seen the waving of the fingers back and forth? I'm sure people probably have seen
that. Right, but I don't know if the listener has.
I know. I wish I could show it. That's the problem with the audio. So I'm waving my hands all over the place here, but you can't see it. But basically it's to get the eyes to move back and forth. The person will move their fingers in front of the person's eyes, or they'll use like a light bar to get their eyes to move back and forth. So I tend to use buzzers instead because it's a little less invasive. So they hold little buzzers in each hand, and then back and forth they buzz. So the buzz right, left, right, left, right, left. And then you can also do it through audio. So you put headphones on someone, then have like it go beep, 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 beep on each side. And so whatever it is, that's that bilateral movement between the two lobes of the brain. And so.
They're thinking of the memory, or do you talk them through a narrative of the memory?
Yeah. So then we pick the target memory. And so then how that session would start this. So once we've targeted the memory, and I do a lot of education around trauma at the beginning too, because a lot of people feel really out of control and, you know, are scared and don't understand, and trying to help them understand, like, these are just your defenses. This is just your brain trying to help you. But that's no longer working. So let's get these memories where they need to go. And so, yeah, so we start with the target memory, and then we'll have them bring up the memory. So, you know, this is what I remember. This is the picture that comes to my mind. And this is how I felt. And this is what I believe. This is what I feel in my body right now. And then we turn on the buzzers. And then the person goes into that memory. And it's really interesting because each person processes differently. Like some people will talk while they're doing it. Most people close their eyes when they do the buzzers. Some people will be dead silent and you'll buzz them for about a minute and then turn it off and you'll say, you know, what's coming up for you now? And it plays, the memory will play in their brain. And so I give the example, it's like watching a movie, like try to, people who do meditation, this is easier for them because they can really like lean into it and try not to control it. And then the memory will play in their brain. And so, and the feelings will come up, but they're able to be in it and not be overwhelmed. Because usually what happens when they think of the traumatic memory, they just go into overwhelm and shut down, or they'll go into fight or flight. And so this allows them to just play through the memory. And then their brain will start to bring in other more positive thoughts about it. Like, you know, but I felt safe in this time, you know, or someone was there for me, or I survived. Or it's interesting to see like how each brain processes differently and for each person. So you go through it until it's no longer distressing. And then you move into what we call installing positive cognition. So what are other thoughts about it? So instead of, you know, I'm powerless, people hurt me, you have instead thoughts of like, I was young, but now I'm an adult and that person did help me and I'm not there anymore and I'm safe now and I'm resilient. And then you go through until you make sure that they're no longer having the body reactions. And then you move to the future templating part, is what we call it, like where they're seeing how they would want to respond differently. So if right now, when they have a conflict with their boss, they go into absolute shutdown because of conflict in their childhood, we have them replay, okay, well, how would you like instead to handle it with your boss? How do you want to feel instead? And then That's where we complete the memory.
Got it. And wait, there. So those are the steps.
Yes. So it's an 8 phase. Everybody's like, okay, let's go right to the reprocessing. And because that's the flashy part. But
is it 8 weeks? Is each week a different step or how do you move through it?
No, it's really different. So one of the things that's really out there that has gotten it a lot of press is like, oh, this is so much faster because it takes a long time to work through trauma, obviously, and to go through the therapy process. And people are like, yay, I'm going to be done with this in 3 weeks. And you can, if it's a car accident and this person has otherwise had, you know, a happy life and there's not any other traumas in there. If I'm working through something like childhood sexual abuse, well, then that's a lot different because there's an awful lot of memories in there. You know, that's years worth of memories and beliefs, and it happened when they were very young. So it really varies. So no, it's not 1 week per, step. And it can take different amount of time for people. So some people it can be a couple months, some people it can be a year, but it is a lot faster than just doing talk therapy through it because they're able to get into the memories faster. They're able to actually, work through them and really loosen things up and change it in a way that, because with trauma, a lot of times that verbal part of your brain, especially if these are early memories, it's really hard for them to even talk about it, to bring that part of their brain online when they're triggered.
Got it. Would it be possible? I always, in these podcasts, it's always great to have an example, but I know it's hard to talk about specific examples, but I mean, could we maybe talk about kind of general trauma and how someone might approach this through EMDR. So someone has kind of an idea of how the process really unfolds.
Yeah. Like kind of a compilation case example type of thing.
Yeah. Or just kind of a general case of kind of not anything specific.
Oh, no, of course not. Yeah.
Right. But maybe something kind of a typical trauma that someone might find EMDR helpful for and how they would move through the process.
Yeah. So, gosh, there's so many different ways we use it. But so I'll give like one example because this has come up in a couple different ways. So somebody who is struggling at work because they're not able to handle conflict, or so they, you know, whenever they feel criticized or whenever there's anything that comes up at work, they feel like their boss is really critical and they just freeze, or they feel like really overly agitated. And a lot of times have a lot of shame around that because they're like, well, you know, I'm a you know, I'm a high powered business person. Why am I freaking out and feeling really small and stupid when someone is critiquing my work? And so I've had different people come to me for this. And I think that it's a good thing to think about. Like, we don't go digging for trauma. It's if it's impacting your current life. And that's the important thing. I mean, this isn't just digging around for no reason. This is like, this is currently impacting you. So how do we get the past in the past? So if someone were to come in and say, you know, I'm really triggered at work because whenever my boss, you know, does a performance evaluation, I can't talk to them about it, or afterwards I'm crying, or I'm just overreacting. I don't know what's wrong with me. And so we may look into, okay, so what are some early things that have happened to you? Why do you think you're responding that way? Have you had situations where you felt that way before? And so usually it's a situation, I'm thinking like of a couple of different clients that have had parents that are verbally abusive, you know, or physically abusive. And so whenever they feel criticized, it triggers that response in them and they feel very small. And the thing about trauma is because of the way that the memories are stored, you also can feel a lot younger in the moment because it's not really in with your other memories and you haven't made meaning of it with your adult brain. And so it makes people feel a lot smaller and younger than they are. And so we would do an intake process where I would ask them, you know, tell me about some of the things that happened to you as a child. What are some of the major memories that you had? How did you feel in the moment? How did you respond in the moment? You know, where are you at now in these relationships? And then we would target the memories and go in and reprocess what is coming up for them. And if they can't even in the moment, like come up with, well, this is the memory where this was so traumatic to me, we may do something called a bridge back, which is where we have them go into the situation with the boss and say, okay, so what were you feeling? What were you thinking? Let your mind drift back. What is the first time that you remember feeling that way? And usually it's, you know, when I was a child, I remember that I, you know, brought home a B on my report card and my father yelled at me and locked me in my room and screamed at me about how stupid I was and I was scared. And so we reprocess that memory. And then when we reprocess it and get it to a point where they can have different beliefs around it. So instead of, you know, I'm stupid, I can't do anything right, I'm not safe, instead they're like, okay, my father had issues, this didn't have anything to do with me, it's not my fault, I am smart, look how much I've done with my life. And they just can think of it and replay that memory without the same level of disturbance. And so that's, it takes it from being a flashback type of a memory to instead being a story. You know, and it changes just the emotional ties that go to it. And then we go in and we do the future templating around that situation that's coming up with the boss. Okay, so how do you want to feel when you talk to your boss? How do you want to feel when you're going through these evaluations? And then they go out into the world and they do those things. And if anything else comes up, we process through that. But it's really remarkable that they go from just feeling completely shut down and crippled in that moment, and then usually shaming themselves about it. Like, why am I responding that way? What is wrong with me? I'm so emotional. But then realizing that, you know, and I tell people, it's not what's wrong with you, it's what happened to you. And not approaching life as like, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? But just something happened to you that this makes sense based on your history. And your brain is doing its best to figure out how to handle the situation. But if your history is broken and you've had bad things happen to you, you know, that's what your brain is pulling from to figure out what's happening. And it's really, really, really freeing for people.
I mean, I could see how it would only be helpful for people who can associate their current feeling and response to things to previous memories. If you can't do that, I mean, EMDR doesn't have much utility, I would assume.
Well, but so what's interesting is like they may not be able to remember. Do you mean like that they can't remember things that happened to them in their childhood?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes they are able to in a way, and, you know, I'm really cautious about this to not be like, no, this is not about finding memories that you don't remember. But a lot of times, I mean, the brain links along different feelings. So if you're feeling, you know, I'm so stupid, I'm so worthless, if you do go into the reprocessing, your brain will just jump from one memory channel to the next and it will find it. I really haven't had that happen where there's been just a deadlock of like, I can't I can't remember. And there's a lot of people who have very, very fuzzy memories about their childhood because they were, you know, dissociated through their childhood. There was, you know, they've been through a lot, but that's really not happened, which is interesting. It's an impressive process.
Yeah. So, I know there's a lot of research that kind of shows how EMDR is effective, and it's a very kind of useful treatment modality. Could you talk to us a little bit about the research that's out there and the data behind it?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I first learned about it, I was very in neuropsych world. So I was all about show me the brain scans. I'm like, this sounds too good to be true. And I was very skeptical going into it. But then I looked at the research and I was like, wow, okay. You know, now that we can measure what's going on in the brain and actually see where brain activity is happening, you can really show that there's a huge shift in what happens when people are remembering these things. It's different parts of the brain get lit up. So the research is really, really good. And which is why it's an evidence-based treatment now. That's used a lot in the VA and Department of Defense and World Health Organization. Everybody's using it. So there's some debate about like, what is the mechanism of change? Although I'd say that's true for a lot of different treatments. So is it that you're having the person, you know, attend to something in the present while dealing with something in the past in a way that keeps their brain from overloading? People used to think that maybe it was a mimicked rapid eye movement. So even when you do the buzzers, you can see someone's eyes moving underneath their eyelids like it does in REM. Is it that, you know, is it just exposure, you know, so exposure to the traumatic memory until your brain starts to adapt to it. So they're still doing a lot of research to figure out what's going on, but it's been shown as very effective. So instead of when someone remembers the traumatic memory or when they're triggered, the parts of their brain that light up really change once you go through the treatment. And instead, when you are triggered, or when you think of the thing, it comes up as just like a normal episodic memory. So that means, you know, in your hippocampus, it's just pulling up as like, oh, this happened to me. And then this happened and that happened, as opposed to when someone has a traumatic memory come up, they feel very in the moment and very overwhelmed and their senses light up and their entire brain lights up in a different way. So it really just moves things around. It's rewiring the brain and it's impressive. I call it physical therapy for the brain because it does it rewire the brain.
Right. So this idea, maybe just a simple way of thinking about EMDR, what it does is that you rearrange things in your brain. So when you have certain stimuli in your current life, it's not necessarily linked to that, right?
Yes.
And
the
physical emotional response isn't linked to that. You kind of cut off that link, right? So it's not that you forget a memory. It's a memory that's there, but it doesn't impact kind of your functioning in your current life.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So the example I'll tell people is like, okay, so trauma is an injury, not an illness. So, and you know, something that a supervisor told me a really long time ago to working with trauma, she's like, you know what, if you can handle hearing horrific stories all day, every day, then you look really smart as a therapist because people get better. People get better from trauma because it's an injury, not an illness. It's not your brain being broken in any way. It's that your brain believes that it's in danger. So if you can help your brain to shift things around where they need to go and complete the processes of healing, then someone feels safe again. And so it's like our, especially like interpersonal trauma is really hard. So if it's someone that was hurt by another person or it's developmental trauma and it's ongoing, that's where it really like gets people tripped up. If someone has had a really terrific life and then they have one traumatic thing, their brain will probably heal itself eventually, right? So if you get into a car accident, you get into a car enough times and eventually you're not scared anymore and you're not triggered anymore and your brain gets back to where it needs to be. But when its systems get overwhelmed, it needs help to do its natural healing processes. And so EMDR is just helping your brain to do what it wants to do. I mean, your body heals itself, your brain is the same way. So this is an injury. And so, but people get to a place where they cannot do it or they don't have mechanisms to do it. And so this just allows your brain to do its natural healing and to put things where they need to be.
But the other question that comes up sometimes when I have patients who are going through the EMDR process with a therapist, they talk about they're in the beginning, there's almost a sense that they might get a little bit worse before they get better.
Yeah. So sometimes, it depends. So the brain is such a cool thing because everybody's brain is so different. So, you know, especially when people will come in and they'll be like, am I doing this right? I'm like, there's not a wrong way to do it. Like, you know, people who are perfectionistic or think they need to do it a certain way. But so usually the response is one of two ways. You either do feel worse at first because you've opened this up and there's this thing that you haven't thought about. But that usually doesn't last too long. So you may feel like really heavy or really tired after your first couple of sessions, because it's a lot of work. Like there's a lot going on in your brain. I tell people like, look, if you were going through like a series of, you know, surgeries or treatments, you would be treating yourself better, right? Like you would be like upping your self-care. You would be taking more naps. You would be thinking about this. I don't know why we dismiss what's going on in the brain more than we do any other part of the body, but, I would just tell them like, be good to yourself. But then usually what happens by, I would say, and sometimes for some people who've done a lot of groundwork and have already done a lot of healing work, they feel better right away because their brain is already set up to do a lot of the processing. They've already done meditation. They have safe people in their lives. They've done therapy. They're not like surprised by the trauma. They know it's there and they have a lot of coping skills. They tend to just feel like a little lighter and a little better every time. So, but for some people who have never even approached this stuff, it can be overwhelming, but I could say that for any type of therapy. And they may feel like tired or sad, or they feel, you know, those feelings that they haven't felt since this thing happened, for one or two, three sessions maybe. And then usually they start to feel better, which is nice. I mean, it is a really, you know, even though I try not to like, you know, it's oversold how quick the treatment works, because you do still have to do the work and people are looking for like the magic, you know, the silver bullet for like, I feel better immediately. It's not that, but it is a lot faster than a lot of therapy treatments.
And certain people that it might not be indicated for or appropriate for?
Yeah. I mean, there's starting to be a lot more research. I mean, I'm in private practice. So there's a lot that I will not do, but that's also true just in general for treatment. You know, I don't work with anyone who has psychosis, anyone who has an active addiction, anyone who's actively suicidal. But I will say this, there is a lot of research that's coming out that in inpatient populations, they are doing that. And it's showing some movement, which is fascinating. So they're doing a ton of research that's because it was before like, okay, so you have PTSD and schizophrenia. So what are you going to do? Right. Like, but there's so much done in the VA with EMDR. It's very, very, well used, in the VA. And so if you have this, you know, comorbid diagnosis, you have two diagnoses, then what do? Are you just out of luck? You're just living with this trauma because you have something else going on. They're actually doing it, but it has to be done in a way that like someone is safe, and they have a lot of safety in their life. They use it a lot now, in addiction treatment centers. And which is great, but I think that should be used in inpatient because if someone is triggered and they don't have a lot of supports at home, you don't want them to be, you know, come in for reprocessing and then go home and feel unsafe. So it just has to be done well. And I have a pet peeve for people who don't do it well, but it has to be done thoughtfully, like every treatment.
Right. Well, actually going kind of further with that thought. I mean, how does someone find an EMDR specialist? What questions should they ask? I mean, how should they think about, you know, the treatment they're getting and how do they mm-hmm. understand if they're getting the right treatment?
Yeah. So your best bet would be to go to MDRIA. So that's the International Association, of EMDR.
How do you spell that?
It's EMDRIA. So it's the EMDR International Association. So anyone who's trained, there's different levels of training. So in order to do EMDR and say that I am an EMDR therapist, you have to do two intensive weekends and then you have to do a certain number of consult hours with someone who supervises you. So that's the most basic level. Beyond that is to get certified. So I'm certified. That is where you're doing, and I also got certified in attachment-focused EMDR, which is like another advanced level of EMDR. So you do like another year and you have to show that you've done a lot more hours. I would say your best bet is to go with someone who's certified, because then you know that they've done a certain number of hours. And then beyond that is consultant. So if someone wants to go ahead and be training other people or supervising other people, then there's the consultant level. MDRIA has a list of everybody who's certified and everybody who is trained through them, and all over the whole world. So this is done all over the world. And that's your best bet to find somebody through there, because, you know, someone could say that they're EMDR trained and not be. And I've heard some, you know, horror stories of people that think that they're going in for EMDR and what they're getting is just not.
Right. Well, that's a great resource just to be able to make sure you can kind of find higher level quality clinicians. What about, are people able to administer this through telepsych, through video?
Yeah. So yeah, it's very cool. Because MDRIA just came out with a big report, looking at all of the research that's been going on for years about whether you can do it, online, or whether you can do it via, I wouldn't do it via phone, but online so that you can watch the person. And yes, you can. So the research shows that it does work. So I've actually been doing it, with patients during the quarantine. And they have their buzzers at home and we just do it online. And it's interesting because some people are actually able to dive into things a little bit deeper because they're in their home. They're not like in an office setting. I mean, we try to make our offices pretty, you know, warm and cozy, but still, you know, you're putting on your clothes, going out into the world, and you know, you have to get back into your car after you're going into some deep stuff. So people are sitting in their beds doing this and they're able to like get into stuff more deeply. So it's very cool. I still prefer to do it in person, but you can do it online. I've been careful to not do really heavy, intense work because I just want to make sure that the person is safe, unless they have someone that's in the home and I know they have good coping skills, just to make sure that, you know, I'm not triggering someone and I'm not there with them in the office. So there's a lot of being sure that it's safe. But yeah, it's the research shows that it's is working just as well. And now they've come up some online tools where you have the little, the therapist can control the little bar that moves across the screen. And then the person can just look at it and do the eye movements, on their screen.
And one last question I have is, if someone wants to read a little bit more about it, do you have any good resources just for kind of the general public to learn a little bit more about EMDR?
Yeah. So I would say, stick to, the actual research-based information, because there is so much misinformation out there. So MDRIA has a lot of resources. So going to the MDRIA website is probably your best bet. The Parnell Institute, they do attachment-focused EMDR. They also have good resources and they publish the research. So you can actually see the research that's out there. And get good information, because it's, you know, EMDR has become so popular and starting to be well known. And so there's going to be people that are, you know, pretending to do it and not doing it well and putting out misinformation. It's not hypnosis. It's not, you know, an instant cure, but it is very effective. So I think that sticking to EMDRIA is the best bet.
Okay, great. Well, I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you think we didn't cover that you think would be helpful for the listener to know about EMDR?
No, I just think that like something that I tell people that if they're wondering, you know, if it's something that they should pursue is, yeah, because it's easy for, if you grow up in a really unsafe environment, like that feels normal to you. And so sometimes people underestimate what they've been through as a child. And so if someone is feeling triggered or overwhelmed, or they're having, you know, dissociation, they're freezing, or they feel like they're going into fight or flight. I just, whenever you feel like you've lost your free will, is the way that I put it out. Like if you go into a situation and you feel like you can't think properly, then it may be that you're going into fight or flight. There may be something underlying and it's not going to hurt to do it. So it's definitely worth looking into. And it just brings so much freedom. And I think that a lot of people are just used to just functioning and surviving, and they're not really realizing that this is something that's fixable. This is something that's that actually is treatable. It's an injury, not an illness. And so I think that a lot of people could have a lot more freedom than they even realize is possible because they haven't had it before.
Yeah. Sounds like a fascinating treatment. Mm-hmm. Effective. Yeah. And well, I really appreciate your time and educating the listener and educating me a little bit more about EMDR. Really appreciate it. And I'll put those links on the podcast episode so people can access those links to learn a little bit about EMDR. But thank you, Dr. Ruan, for being our guest. And I'll also put the information about your practice so people learn a little bit more about you as well.
Thank you. Yes. And thank you for doing this. This is so great that you're presenting all of this, good information out there for people so they can actually be educated. So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's fun to do. All right. Well, be well.
Oh, you too. Take care.
All right.